all the sports, all the news, Sportsfire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches, and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Rico. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Sportsfire. Welcome to our syndication partners, West Coast FM in Namibia, 90.3 FM in Plettenberg Bay, Knysna FM, Cowie FM in Port Alfred, Wild Coast FM in East London, and Eldos FM in Johannesburg. On the show tonight, we're chatting to Kickoff.com's Tiani Mabasa. We'll take a look back at the Soweto Derby from the weekend and plenty of other stuff to chat about, including that big win for Polokwane City. Athletics journalist and analyst Manfred Seidler. There was a big conference in Joburg last week. Lots to catch up there. What happened with regards to doping? There was David Walsh, the guy that pretty much suspected Lance Armstrong was cheating for years. He was there as well as a guest speaker. Heard it was very interesting. Sportsfire rugby analyst Dan Retief will look back at the Curry Cup final. The Sharks are champions, including the announcement of the box squad, which happened just a short while ago. Motorsport journalist Greg Maloney, Formula One season pretty much wrapped up. Well, it has. Sebastian Vettel is champion again. Teletrack analyst Shane McGregor with the numbers and, of course, Norm. The clips tonight include the ball tampering issue, BBC Football News, Curry Cup, and Sebastian Vettel. At Joffe's My Boy is the Twitter handle, Facebook Graham Joffe, the website sportsfire.co.za. Sportsfire, powered by Rico, South Africa's leading provider of document management solutions.
Daddy, why do you come here?
Because here I can be creative.
Why is that important?
Because that's how we create our document solutions.
Why do you need document solutions?
Because they revolutionize the way people work.
What's revolutionized?
At Rico, we have as many document solutions as a six-year-old has questions. Why? Because when integrated creatively, information and technology drive productivity and profitability. Rico. Imagine. Change.
Well, you make up your own mind. The issue there is that zip. That's the problem. So the umpire's having a good look.
Never mind the zip. This is the soapbox. It's more about cheating or not cheating. Ball tampering or not ball tampering. What was Faf du Plessis trying to do with the ball in that second test against Pakistan? In my opinion, it didn't look good at all. And I think he was lucky to escape with just losing half his match fee. Match referee David Boone quoted as saying, "After discussions with Mr. du Plessis, he has elected not to contest that charge, but I'm also satisfied that this was not part of a deliberate and or prolonged attempt to unfairly manipulate the condition of the ball, and that the imposition of a fine of 50% of his match fee is appropriate considering the circumstances. I think the penalty needed to be a lot harsher to send out a stronger message. The players are earning big salaries. Losing half a match fee is not going to deter others." And interesting is that AB de Villiers was asked about ball tampering ahead of the ICC Champions Trophy semi-final against England back in June. And this is what he had to say to The Guardian.
If they are doing something funny with the ball, then it's definitely a concern, yes. But we've got no proof of that. Look, they seem to get it to reverse a bit quicker than the rest of the team, so maybe they've just got really good skill in the bowlers. We've tried it as well. I think all teams try to do that, and we haven't really managed to succeed in that. We'll try that again tomorrow and see if our bowlers can find that skill to reverse the ball.
This is Sportsfire with Graham Joffe, powered by Rico.
Our first guest on Sportsfire tonight, Tiani Mabasa from Kickoff.com. T, hello, my brother.
Hey, boss, how's it, man?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Right, sure. Let's get stuck in. Soweto Derby 1-1. Your thoughts on the game?
Interesting enough, you know, I was just chatting to the referee on the day, Victor Tlungwane.
Right.
Just now, you know, and I think the most disappointing thing for people was perhaps the way he handled the game, you know? And his argument is that he wanted the game to flow. You know, some players had these delaying tactics, you know, fouls were committed, and he wanted the game to flow. So from that point of view with the match officials, obviously disappointing, but the big error obviously there was the offside goal. That was clear offside. Even Stevie Wonder could have seen that, you know, just to be honest.
Yeah,
it's very, very disappointing, boss. We talk about referees week in and week out, and we say the same thing. We go around in circles about referees. I think it's high time they do something about it. I think with Danny Jordan now in charge of SAFA, it's something that I have to look at seriously, you know, because we suggested that maybe this referee must be full-time on the job. Maybe they'll have more time to concentrate on the job than being a policeman somewhere, than being a principal of a school somewhere. That doesn't give them much time to actually review their matches and so on and so on. So maybe being a full-time job for the soccer players, it should be a full-time job for the referees as well.
Yeah, I mean, the linesman himself, I mean, the linesman has to be, you know, certainly there's got to be some questions asked. I mean, it was a blatant offside, as you say.
And the most disappointing thing there, boss, is that he has a FIFA referee on he's on their panel. He's been all over the place. He's done this all over, you know, and you'll expect him to do a much better job than anybody else because he's the most experienced of the guys, you know, of these assistant referees and so on. But yet you get disappointed by these sort of things. That's what I'm saying. It's high time they do something about it.
Yeah, it's all very well letting the game flow, but I mean that probably what's built up to that big incident and the fracas. And is there going to be any action taken, or is there anyone? I mean, kind of like in rugby, has anyone been cited for the incident?
No, never bet on it, boss. It'll never happen. You know, even the review committee. The last time I checked, they took about 2 to 3 months to review a match. So for me, if a match plays this weekend, you review the match for 2 months, 3 months down the line, what's the point? You know, you're not going to change anything about that match anyway. So why don't you do it the way they do it in the UK, for example? In the UK, after the match is on the Monday, they sit down and review the decisions taken by the match officials during their respective matches. And then they say, you know what, that was not the red card. Then they'll rescind it. And then the next match, the player is back on and playing. You know, that's how to go about it. Why bother pay people to review matches after 2 months?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, of the two coaches, who would have been happier with the 1 point?
Yeah, definitely Roger Tissat. I mean, he's faced with some tough matches, you know, in the past few weeks or past months, playing some big teams in the CAF Champions League, playing in the M10 Etfal, playing Chiefs twice in the M10 Etfal as well, playing the likes of SuperSport United. So he's been through hell, you know, with these matches, but he's done well to get a point from this match. I think he should be happy because his team has been traveling all over the place, and the last thing you expect from them is to actually win against their bitter rivals.
How about that other result on Saturday? I mean, Polokwane City 1, Sundowns 0. Unbelievable.
Hey, unbelievable, boss. You know, and a lot of people expected Sundowns to win this match by a big margin because they had just beaten a better side in AmaZulu 7-1. So we expect them to walk over Polokwane City. But I think we ignored a lot of things with regards to Polokwane City. They're no longer coached by a physical trainer anymore, you know. They're coached by Pumi Solomons. The guy's been around the block for so many, many years. And he knows what he's doing. And this team, this same Polokwane City, they used to be called Bay United. And I remember so many seasons ago, they beat Sundowns home and away in the league, 1-0. I think that was the scoreline in both matches. And it just seems like this is their bogey team.
Wow. Was that Bay United when they were in Port Elizabeth?
Yes. So they bought them. They went to Polokwane and they renamed the club to Polokwane City. So I guess whether they change the name or not, they will still be Sundowns.
Super Sports United on top on goal difference. I guess they'll think they probably dropped points, although they got a last-minute penalty in the 1-1 draw with Bloom Celtic. But that's two drop points, you would say, for Super Sports United.
Yeah, definitely 2 points lost at home. That's a bit of a problem. You know, I mean, they went down to Maritzburg and they got 3 points there. They won 1-0. They come back home. You'll expect them to get maximum points as well. Then they drop 2 points. And as much as they're top of the log, you know, if they go on like that, you know, dropping so many points, especially when you play at home, they'll have problems come the end of the season. You know, they're a good side and I think they can challenge for league honors, but they should be winning their home matches, you know. And when they're on the road, even if they get a point on the road, then it's not that bad, you know. So, but losing so many points at home is going to come back to haunt them.
Well, Sundowns losing no longer any unbeaten side in the league, and I just want to touch on Zacha Marks and Swallows. I mean, yeah. You know, quietly going about his business, and I mean, it's impressive. They beat Platinum Stars 2-0. They're just behind SuperSport United on goal difference.
Nobody gives him credit, boss. Nobody gives him credit, and the man has done a fantastic job. The other day, I went to their training ground, you know, and they had to stop training because. The ground was giving in, you know. It's just not good enough for a professional team to be training there. So you're faced with that as a coach, and you have about 24 players as your squad for the season, and you compare with some teams, there are 50 players in the squad, and they can do whatever they want. You know, he doesn't have that luxury. And you look at players like Lifa Tsutsulupa as well, he's injured now. It's a problem for Zacha Marks, but he goes out there and he gets the job done. I think credit to him, and I think I just hope that other people will recognize his hard work at Swallows.
Just looking at the games played, SuperSport United have played 8, Swallows have played 8. I go down to the to the bottom of the table and I see Pirates have played 3 games. I mean, I know it's because they've been in the CAF Champions League, but surely this is going to be a fixture nightmare, a schedule nightmare at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely, boss. Because now, today they had to postpone some more matches for these teams. You know, it's going to be hell, you know, for any team, especially for Pirates, like you rightly mentioned, having played only 3 games, and which means they are 5 behind, you know. That's not going to be easy for them. And when they lose ground and they eventually lose... in the league race, you know, they'll point to that and say, you know what, the league could have done better there, you know, in terms of accommodating us, and so on and so on. So they'll probably be within their eyes to point fingers. But I just hope it's a lesson going forward because, you know, we can't keep complaining about fixtures, season in and season out. You know, I think we've had this situation time and time again, and they don't have it in the other leagues, in the big leagues, where they're doing things right, you know. So maybe it's high time we learn from those guys as well.
Yeah, and I see they've moved those Telkom semi-finals to the 23rd of November.
Yeah, definitely, boss, definitely. So they've postponed some matches, and some matches are going to be, you know, brought forward. And it's just a complicated situation, you know. It doesn't work well for our football.
Kickoff.com's Tiani Mabasa. T, thanks again, my brother.
All right, boss. Sharp.
Hello, I'm Joe Parsons at the BBC with the latest from the English Premier League. A late goal from Fernando Torres secured a 2-1 win for Chelsea over Manchester City at Stamford Bridge on Sunday. The game had looked set for a draw before Torres capitalised on a defensive error by Manchester City's Joe Hart and Matija Nastasic, which led to the winner. And Torres knows the importance of this victory over one of their title rivals.
It's important because we got a draw against Tottenham and Man United away, so we wanted to beat one of the main contenders for the Premier League, and especially because it's the first game at home against one of those teams. So really pleased for the win. It's important more for mental than maybe because it's early in the season, but mentally it's going to be very important for us, and we have another important game coming in today, so grateful news for the team.
Manuel Pellegrini said he didn't want to shake hands with Jose Mourinho after the game. That was after the Chelsea manager jumped into the crowd to celebrate Torres' winner. Mourinho was apologetic afterwards and says he didn't mean to cause offence.
I hope especially Man City doesn't misinterpret me because my kid is there just behind the dugout, and I had that feeling to go for the kid. I couldn't reach him because people jump on me, but I went for the kid. I didn't go to make any kind of sarcastic celebration, far away from it. So if they accept my explanation, which is the truth, I hope they accept.
Roberto Soldado scored a controversial late penalty to hand Tottenham a 1-0 win against Hull City. The victory moves Spurs to fourth place in the Premier League table. But manager Andre Villas-Boas is not happy, not with his team, but with the lack of support at White Hart Lane.
Away from home, their support has been absolutely amazing. We play with no fear, with full confidence, and that's why we've beaten all of the records away from home last season. And I think we need to bring this atmosphere into White Hart Lane. We need them to go through games like this and not that negativeness that was present in the stadium today.
Sunderland defeated Newcastle in the Tyne Wear Derby by 2-1 to secure their first victory under new manager Gus Poyet. And Poyet feels this win will give a confidence boost to his squad.
I think that it's going to change the season. It's difficult to predict the future, but I'm sure that Tuesday is going to be absolutely a totally different atmosphere at the training ground. I'm sure that the players are going to be, you know, even more together. I'm sure that the fans, you know, they're going to be looking forward to the next game. We are sold out away from home next week. So everything is sticking together.
And in the one other Premier League game on Sunday, Swansea drew 0-0 with West Ham. And for more football news from the BBC, use your mobile phone. Just go to bbc.com/mobile.
As I mentioned earlier in the show, there was a big sports summit, international sports summit in Joburg last week, and some top-line guests, and I believe it was extremely interesting. And joining us now to chat more about that and some other athletic stuff is athletics journalist and analyst Manfred Seidler. Manfred, thanks for joining us again.
Always a pleasure.
All right, the sports summit, I believe, a lot of very interesting stuff was spoken.
Yeah, it was. Actually, I think it's the second year running. I was there last year as well, and it's quite intriguing to see because it's pretty much captains of industry and sponsors and so on to get together, and they speak to, I suppose, marketing gurus and media gurus as to how to best, you know, get the most out of their sponsorship with regards to sport, but also the impact on you know, the different sporting codes, the reputation that they have, or the good or bad reputation, or the good or bad image that they have, and that how that affects your brand. And it was quite intriguing to see how some people you know, would throw out some really, really intriguing comments. I mean, Sammy was part of the opening panel, and he made some comments, you know, why is corporate South Africa not supporting swimming and the other Olympic sporting codes so much? Why was the big three? He made references to Athletics South Africa. Never mentioned the word Athletics South Africa, but that came across a good few times, not just by Sam Ramsey, but a few other people who were at the conference saying, you know, why would you want to invest in a brand that basically is going through a very, very bad time and right now doesn't seem to have a very good public image? So very intriguing and very informative.
Yeah, if I was there, I could have told Mr. Ramsamy why no corporates are supporting swimming, and I can give him some documentation to prove it as well. But anyway, just as well I wasn't there.
Leaving aside your documentation and so on, the big thing is, and I'm just surprised that nobody actually raised it there, was, you know, for the people on the panel and so on, is the fact that South African Olympic sports just don't have the support. They've never, ever had it, and it's not a hierarchical, it's a inherited thing, because we, for all the years we've been cricket, rugby and soccer mad, and that's where all the funds have gone to. I think it was the lady from Standard Bank, Jenny, I forget her surname, she was up there and she was saying, you know, we're not going to put money into a sporting code, a smaller sporting code that just doesn't give us the return on investment. And that's the other side of the coin. It's not just the you know, the reputation and so on. It was also the matter of you know, how much am I as an investor or a sponsor, if you would, going to get out of it from a, you know, from a exposure point of view, from a CSI point of view, and what's also very important to sponsors these days, how much are they going to get out of it, you know, for future business references? It's not just a matter of putting money in for CSI purposes. The sponsor is now turning around saying, well, you know, it's an investment. We want to see some bang for our buck.
Sure. Headline guest speaker, David Walsh, for those people who don't know, he's the guy that pretty much for years and years pretty much said that Lance Armstrong was one of the biggest cheats in world sport. And I mean, what is his whole talk must have been very, very interesting, especially when no one actually wanted to side with him as well. He was pretty much a lone figure.
He was, and it was actually quite interesting. He had a speech for around about an hour or so, and I had the chance to actually interview him one-on-one beforehand. And I asked him, you know, I mean, for 13 years you've been turning around and you've been saying to the world, this man is a cheat, he's a fraud, and he came under vociferous attacks from Lance Armstrong, who we all know is was a master manipulator. And the one thing I said to him was, how did you deal with that? Because he was not only ostracized by Lance Armstrong, it got to the point that the Peloton, the whole cycling fraternity, looked at him and said, we're not touching you. You're a pariah. You're bringing our sport down, and we don't talk to you. And that, of course, is the philosophy of the matter. You know, everything that's what they call it, is that everything that happens in the Peloton stays in the Peloton. So it was very tough for him. In fact, he was regating the story, I think it was in 2004, he was in one of the were sharing a car with a couple of the media guys, and they turned around and said, we can't have you in our car anymore. Lance Armstrong won't talk to us if he sees you in our car. And that's how bad it had gotten. That's how that was the strength of Lance Armstrong, how he'd taken over the sport. And of course now the proof's in the pudding, and it's all come out he's a cheat. It was quite interesting because they played a clip when Oprah Winfrey interviewed Lance Armstrong, and she asked him, are you going to apologize to David Walsh? He says, yeah, I guess I do owe the man an apology. And of course that apology is still forthcoming, and it hasn't happened yet. David Walsh also said, and this is quite interesting because I thought it was a weak interview, but he thought that the interview by Oprah Winfrey was actually pretty, pretty good and very strong. And in fact, didn't give Lance Armstrong the opportunity to stand on a soapbox and dominate. And, she asked him hard questions, and she made sure that she spoke about the drugs and the drugs only. She didn't go into any of the other aspects. So, very intriguing. Like I said, I thought it was a weak interview, and here he comes with really good interview. So it was quite interesting.
And I mean, just some other points of interest that came out of the summit itself, and I believe South Africa also hosting the World Conference on Doping in November.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that because there was one of the talks was also with the breweries, South African breweries. There was Craig Nosser from Discovery, and then there was a representative of WADA, the African representative of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association. And the talk there was about alcohol and banning of advertising of alcohol on sporting events and so on. And then obviously it reverted back to doping and so on. And one interesting thing was that what is currently being discussed in terms of legislation in the World Anti-Doping Association is that it's not just the athlete, because right now it's strict liability. If I'm an athlete and there's something in my system, it's my responsibility. Yet we saw with the example of Ludwig Mamabolo that the information going out there is not big enough, it's not good enough. He was totally unaware. Look, a lot of us think he got off on a technicality, but the point is that his argument, which is quite valid, it says that English is not my mother tongue. I am not a fluent person with regards to the internet and those kind of things. So I actually didn't really have access to that information, which many people in this day and age will say is a lot of rubbish, but there are a number of countries who actually do have that problem. So what WADA is looking at is also looking at the whole strict liability scenario, and that will be coming under the spotlight in their conference now in November, is what about the support staff? I mean, again, the Lance Armstrong case, there was a total setup. It wasn't just Lance Armstrong who was, just basically putting the dope into a system. He had the backup of support staff, and it was a planned effort, et cetera, et cetera. So it's now not just the athlete that will be banned. They're seriously looking at how do they go after the support staff, and that will be quite interesting. Also quite interesting to see how are they actually going to enforce that. How do you stop a coach from coaching? How do you go and stop a doctor from giving you or a sports scientist or whatever from giving you some medication which is supposed to give you an edge? It's just how to police that is going to be the next big question, I think.
All right. And then just quickly on ASA, any latest news? Are they still suspended from SASCOG? Is there any developments? I know the IAAF was supposed to get involved as well. We lost Manfred there. But anyway, as far as I know, there's been no new developments. The IAAF was supposed to send a commission or delegate here to South Africa to meet with Sam Ramaswamy. That didn't happen. Then I saw Gideon Sam talking about how they were going to do what they want to do if the IAAF doesn't want to listen to them. Typical bully tactics again from SASCOG. But that was Manfred Seidler, athletics analyst and journalist, talking to us on Sports Fire tonight. Right, let's talk some rugby now, and the Sharks, Curry Cup champions. What a great game. 33-19 winners over Western Province at the weekend. And I saw a story today where Keegan Daniel was praising the influence of Brendan Fenter. And it takes me back to before the Curry Cup even started, and this was Fenter's assessment of the Sharks.
I think the Sharks are privileged. They got a lot of good players. They recruit really well, and it's a strength of their union. You can imagine Hanku Fenter and Steph, the scrum off, two great players, Rob Dupria. So there's a lot of youngsters I look forward to working with. And if they can learn from the likes of a Butch James and a Marco Wenzel, you can understand why Peter Steph Du Toit decided to stay in the end, because he'll be learning from a guy like Marco. And Marco is prepared to look after Peter Steph and guide Peter Steph in this process. And that's a privilege when you get to those positions. Odwa is definitely going to start at 15 for us, and we're going to play him there. That's going to be his position. He tested brilliantly. You know, he's got a lot of pace still. I mean, he ran a 1.55 in the 10 metre and a 4.93 on the 40. Now, that's fantastic for a 32-year-old. So if he can link that brain he's got and his experience with keeping his physical condition the way he has, we can actually have a big star there. It's a real pity that Sporta Sithole broke his hand, because he was looking great in training. Tim Whitehead linking up with Louis Ludic, that could be a great combination to look at. Having Butchie out there again, the old head, organizing our team, you know, he's been very good in training. And Fred played on the weekend for us. Fred was extremely good, very impressed with him. Keegan, like always, throwing himself around, gives that explosiveness we need. Jean Daisel and Terra. Terra had a fantastic game the other evening. He was exceptionally good. A young guy called Brainard Stander, who I hadn't worked with before, but Brad and they were vouching for him, came through brilliantly. Edwin and Marco in the locks, impressive. You know, Marco running the line out and Edwin playing a full game. His conditioning is now coming right up there where it should be. And then a strong front row in Dale and Kyle and Vian. You know, so it's a good rugby side, that. And it's something to look forward to.
Yep, and it certainly was something to look forward to, as the Sharks ended up being Curry Cup champions for this season. Sportsfire rugby analyst Dan Retief. Danny, good evening.
Yes, hi, Joffers. How are you doing? Yeah. Are you dry? Where are you sitting?
No, we in studio we dry, but it's pouring outside. And Danny, I will chat about the box squad in a moment, but I just want to come back to Brendan Fenter, because there's been heaps of praise for the job that he's done in a very short space of time at the Sharks.
Yeah, immense job he's done, and I think the tactics that were evident in the final were down to Brendan Fenter. You know, I for the whole season have wondered about that Western Province defence, that constricting defence. I think you and I have chatted that I believe that they're often uniformly offside. They're sort of a half a metre behind the last foot, and that's fine. You know, you push the envelope if the referee allows it, and so I thought what Brendan really did very well, and I trust it was him. It might have been one of the other coaches who worked it out. Is that Province are very vulnerable to the kick in the box behind the forwards and the kick behind the back line. And I think a lot of teams have probably worked that out, that the way to get at Province is to turn them around. But they've tended to kick the ball too deep. And what the Sharks did fantastically was kick the ball slightly shorter. That meant that Geo Aplon and Cheslin Colby and Gerard van Heerden had to come forward to the ball, which they weren't accustomed to. It brought them that much closer to the defence when they were in possession, and the Sharks were then able to snuff them out. You know, and then I think the other thing for me with Western Province, I mean, the Sharks' commitment was unquestioned. They played with such passion, you couldn't believe it, you know. And they did rattle Western Province, especially when you consider that they had a try disallowed on very spurious grounds. But for me, Western Province finally in the final paid the price for the way they've been playing for a long time now. And it's my contention, and I'm willing to be shot down on it, but Western Province tend to play not to lose. They don't play to win. And then when the Sharks got the interception try through Sean McLeod, they suddenly went 10-0 down, and that was against their expectations, even though they did come and score a very good try through De Allender. But I felt that Western Province were knocked out of their comfort zone. They wanted to play a game where they were going to restrict the Sharks, put them in a tight jacket, and dictate the game that way. And suddenly they were behind. And they just don't play that way anymore. They don't play to attack, to score tries. And I think that interception try by Sean McLeod was crucial to the whole outcome.
Yeah, and so often, Dan, we've seen it in rugby games when an interception try early on, it really just gives that other team so much confidence.
Absolutely, because you're sitting on a cushion of points. You're feeling good about the way you're playing. The Sharks played to a plan. You know, they didn't throw the ball around willy-nilly, because for me, their great weakness in the last couple of seasons has been that they play the 50-50 ball too much. And certainly in the final, that was completely eradicated. They played to a plan. And the plan was really well executed by Sean McLeod and Patrick Lambie. And, you know, kudos to them, and especially to Patrick Lambie. You know, I've been a bit of a supporter of Patrick Lambie. I believe he is the kind of fly-off that can add a different dimension if he's allowed to. And I thought he pretty much showed that, you know, in spite of, you know, missing kicks at the post, which people will hold against him because, of course, they'll point out that Mornay Steyn kicks them over. But I think in the context of the game, of one man standing up and running the game, it was Patrick Lambie. You know, he pretty much, to me, outshone Dimitri Katrakilis on the day. And then, of course, finals are always won by the forwards. And the Sharks got on top in the pack. And invariably, you find the team that wins a final is the team that had the superior forwards.
Overall, a great game of rugby. And I think a really fitting end for Jonathan Kaplan, because I thought he handled the game very well.
Yeah, I was a bit upset about some things. I think the referees, and not just Jonathan, they go to the TMO far too easily. And you know, they go to the TMO and ask the TMO to confirm things that they've clearly seen, you know, so no, why not just call it, you know. But I must say that it tugged at my heartstrings to see how emotional he got, you know, because he's had such a long career, and Jonathan is a good guy, you know, and he's one of those blokes with a lovely sense of humour and a little cutting edge to some of his remarks. And the moment and the singing of the anthem just got to him. So, you know, my heart went out to him. And I thought, you know, well done to you. What a great career you've had. What a great servant he's been. And a little guy like Jonathan, I wonder how many of the other little referees are around now who looked at him and took his example and said, well, there is room for me in this game. And you know, they became referees.
Yeah, I think he's been a great servant to South African rugby. I think one of our real top referees, and, you know, wish him well for the future. And a nice little touch was that picture after the game, which has been circulated on, I think it was on Facebook, where he's in the middle of the Du Plessis brothers. And supposedly Bismarck told him after the game that Jonathan, in all four finals that Bismarck's played in, Jonathan Kaplan has reffed them and they've won it. So it's a great picture, nice little memoir.
Yeah, I hope somebody provides him with a copy of that. You know,
he has got it, I think.
Yeah, and I believe that Jonathan has been in the process of writing a book, and you know that might have influenced his decision to go now, because you obviously can't have a book revealing certain things and what might go on in the tunnel. So I look forward to that.
Yeah, and he was very cagey. He didn't say anything about that when we interviewed him on Sportsfire, so that's interesting. Right, Danny, then let's, just before I get to the box squad, actually, Province, can you foresee then maybe any coaching changes? And, I mean, do you think they're going to push some panic buttons?
Yeah, they might. You know, I've chatted to some of my old Konecos down south of the Hex River Valley, and there are a lot of people that are saying, you know, that they need to look at Alistair Coetzee, that he's had a lot of success. He's got his teams to finals. They keep and often fail in the big games, largely because of the joke, because they didn't turn up. And there must be something wrong with their mental preparation. And so they probably will look at it, you know. But Western Province, I think, are a union with really serious problems. They have to sort out their structures, you know, where they just have too many clubs, too many presidents, or too many presidents who want to stick an oar in, you know. And that made it difficult for Nick Mallett. It made it difficult for Rossi Erasmus. And I'm sure it makes it very difficult for Alistair Coetzee, you know. So I think Western Province need to take a long, hard look at themselves, because they have so much talent. And if the boardroom, if the committee room is preventing the team from performing as they should, I think that's maybe where they should start.
Let's get on to the box squad. The announcement this afternoon of the 32-man Springbok squad for the end-of-year tour to Wales, Scotland and France. Four new caps, the big one being Skara Ntumbeni.
Yeah, it's always very difficult, Joffers, to sort of be critical of a Springbok team, because being included in a team means so much to the players, you know, and you don't want to spoil their moment, you know. But I'm really surprised at the selection of Skara Ntumbeni. You know, what has Chili Boy Ralapela done wrong? You know, especially in a squad where all kinds of people, seven players from teams in France, Japan and Ireland have been recalled, but not Chili Boy Ralapela has gone this whole way, you know. And I just think that as good a player as Skara Ntumbeni is, I think he's a bit small. I thought, and I have thought for a long time, that he tends to balk on his throw-ins. In other words, Afrikaners say "uit gemik," you know, which you're not allowed to in rugby, and he might get caught for that. But of course, you know, you have to bear in mind he's the third choice. Okay, you know, he's probably not going to play ahead of Bismarck and Adrian Strauss. But the selection does rather smack of the old time window dressing, And I wouldn't be surprised if in some quarters Heineke Meyer takes a few shots for that.
Yeah. Just of the other uncapped players, Peter Steph Du Toit, since he's come back, he's just been brilliant.
He was fantastic. I thought he was a very deserved man of the match. I mean, for a young guy playing as a tight forward to play the way he did, you know, and I think when you look at number four and five, and we were sort of thinking, you know, Victor Matfield, Bakis Botha, isn't that amazing? Bakis Botha back in the Springbok side. But, you know, four and five with Etzebeth and Peter Steph Du Toit, who've come through every level of rugby. So I think the two lock positions are absolutely secured. The other one that really surprised me is Schroeder, the young scrum off being picked. He's been in the squad before. He was called up to Nelspruit with Piet van Sail. And I just don't think he's been that impressive at all. We've seen him a lot for Western Province. We've seen him in the Stormers, Louis Schroeder. He's got a record. He's got a CV of having come through the divisions. But I just believe if you look at the scrum offs, you know, what has Jano Vermaak done wrong since he's left for France? Piet van Sail, I thought, was maybe a more talented player. Kobus Reinach of the Sharks. What about Charles McLeod? Could he not have snuck back in? And then, of course, playing in France at the moment and playing outstandingly and considered to be the best scrum off in French rugby is Rory Cockett. So there were other options. But, you know, Heineke Meyer and his selectors, they must see something in Louis Schroeder that they believe he can bring to the team. And again, I don't want to spoil his selection. The other new cap, France Malherbe, tight head prop, I think that goes to the fact that we're really looking for a tight head prop. Koenig Oosthuizen's meant to do the job. I'm very surprised that Yannick Duplessis has been given a tour. I mean, the bloke really needs a rest, and I think they could have left him at home, seen how Koenig went as first choice. But then there were others, you know, CJ van der Linde, Lawrence Adrianse, Vian Herbst, JC Jansen-Ferencic, although he's normally a loose head. And then the one that really surprises me, given the South African situation, what has Trevor Nayakani done? You know, did he do something that badly that, you know, for missing a bus and being dropped from the Springboks? Surely there was a chance to bring him back on a tour where they're together for 4 weeks. So as you can hear, I'm quite surprised at some of the selections.
Just finally on the selections, and I'm also extremely happy to see that Gio Aplon's back in the squad. And you mentioned Bakis Botha, so Jacques Ferreira's back. There's obviously no policy with overseas players. They're going to pick them regardless.
Yeah, and JP Peterson is also back now. Morne Steyn, Bakis, Habana. You know, guy, Ruan Pinar is still back. I thought he might be somebody that would be struck off the list, you know, because he's not been that impressive, but they seem to feel he is the understudy for Farida Priya. But there again, seven players, so the rule doesn't exist. And, you know, SA Rugby, I think, are on very shaky ground. You know, they're on thin ice because people are going to start going overseas and saying, I'll take my chances with the Springbok side. But as a matter of interest, I did a quick little exercise of all the players who've recently been in the Springbok squad, and these are not the injured players, because they made it quite clear that Arno Botha, Piers Spies, Francois Hochard, and Jaco Tata are injured and weren't considered. But now, what about the others? Listen to this. Bjorn Besson, Yandre Kruger, Trevor Nayakani, Pat Sillier, Lewazi Mavombo, Franco Fananava, Raymond Ruhl, Ryan Kankowski, Elton Yankees, Dion Kralin, Jacques Potgieter, Johan de Jong, and Lionel Mapu. They've recently been in the squad, so clearly they have been moved aside, because when the selection says that the four injured players who weren't considered, and you're not amongst those injured players and you're not in the squad, then certainly a Bjorn Besson and a Yandre Kruger, they must realise that their days in the green and gold are gone.
Dan Retief, our Sportsfire rugby analyst. Thanks again, Danny.
We look forward to later in the week.
Great stuff. And just before I'd be amiss not to mention the Pumas. Back in the Curry Cup, what a superb performance, Jimmy Stonehouse and company.
Yes, absolutely. I thought the Griquas were terrible. You know, I'm a Kimberley boy, and I thought they'd stay up. They just played so badly. 15, 20 minutes into the game, I actually tweeted that if Griquas keep giving the ball away, they're going to give away their A-section status. They kept giving the ball away. Billy LaRue tried to play the Pumas on his own. And it didn't come off, you know, he just tried too much. But the Pumas were full value. They went into the A section in style. But I now see an interesting development, you know, because the last time when they voted for eight up and six down, it went against that vote, and that's why there was this promotion relegation. But now it might change, because there's another vote coming in December, and with the Griquas going down, Griquas are definitely going to vote for eight, and the Pumas are now in, so they'll vote for eight. And then, of course, Cheeky Watson and the Kings, the EP Kings, will push very hard for eight up and six down. suddenly people like Griquas and Pumas and everybody are going to be on Cheeky's side. And that next vote might well go to a top division of eight teams.
Damn it, Tiff. Thanks again.
Cheers, Joffers.
N, I've just got wind of an imminent security breach.
Don't worry, I've already destroyed Document Y.
You did what?
Relax, Bo. I first converted it into digital format with Document Manager NX.
Great. Now everyone has access to it.
I saved it as a password-protected PDF.
Really?
And I'm tracking any activity on it.
Darn it. Is document management that good? I'll soon be out of a job.
You want to know my secret? A secure document solution from Ricoh. I'll even give you the password. Ricoh.co.za. Ricoh. Imagine change.
Well, it's all over in the Formula One Championship for 2013. Sebastian Vettel winning in India and sealing a fourth world title. 10 wins in 16 races so far this season. Unbelievable performance. And Vettel somewhere now up there with some of the greatest drivers in the history of the sport.
Sebastian, firstly, huge congratulations.
Fuck.
No, it is dark. You're giving us all what we want. You've stayed in the pen for ages, so thank you. But I guess there's no amount of superlatives that can really do your achievement justice. Tell us what is the most pleasing aspect of it for you.
Well, I would say doing burnouts or doing donuts on the grid after the race is pretty rewarding. I'm sure my engineer would love to kill me for that.
Fans loved it.
I loved it. So I said, yeah. He obviously was calling for usual procedure, switching off the car in the parc fermé, etc. And I said, well, not today. I'm going to pull a couple of burnouts and donuts on the main straight, which just felt great in front of, you know, so many people at the grandstand.
Bit naughty to swear, sorry about that to our viewers, but I think you can get away with it today.
People paid to see that, so it's
fine. Do they? Makes it more exciting. So, but in terms of joining the pantheon of greats, the likes of Schumacher, Fangio, and to overtake someone like Senna, I mean, that's just an incredible achievement. You're 26, for goodness sake.
Yeah, but I think if we talk about Senna, then we have to say that obviously it was dreadful that, you know, he passed away way too soon, and I think there was a lot more to come from him. But to join a club of world champions already is very difficult to find the right words. And the last 4 years, incredible. You know, the team, the spirit inside the team grew so much, and we had.
Yeah, Sebastian Vettel, four-time world champion. Joining us now is motorsport analyst and journalist as well, Greg Maloney. Greg, hello, boy.
Joff is my boy. How are you?
Yeah, good to chat again. And, I mean, Sebastian Vettel, I mean, they were talking about it. He's got to be right up there with some of the greats in the sport now.
No doubt about it. I think there's five words to say it quite clearly. Unforgettable.
You're very good.
You know, he did a super job, I've got to say, and you can take nothing away from the kid. He really is the class of the field. The rest of the guys they've been found wanting, and unfortunately at the end of the season, when it comes down to this kind of championship, when it's so tight, and it has been, it literally has been. I mean, anybody could have won this season, which is really good, and it's why the way the Formula One has gone over the past couple of seasons, they've really opened up the championship to anybody in that class to win out. And, you know, unfortunately, Sebastian's been the class of the field, and yet again, he's shown his class.
I guess a bit of an anti-climax to the season, because there's still quite a few races to go, and, I mean, it's all over. It's all over.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what happens. It's kind of what happens in South African motorsport on numerous occasions. So, welcome to the world of motorsport, Mr. Eccleston. Sometimes your plans work, sometimes they don't. But needless to say, there's still an opportunity, you know, for Red Bull to be pushed to the limit, and hopefully next season is going to be a bit of a tighter one. But the way things have gone this season with Red Bull, and of course with Mark Webber as his teammate, it didn't go so good for him, you know. So he's looking at possibly greener pastures for next year. He's already announced that he's going to be moving on. Not quite sure where he's going just yet. There are a couple of deals on the table, I think, for him. But there's also the opportunity, you know, or the possibility, I should say, that he might be out of it because, you know, he's getting old. And at the end of the day, all the F1 teams are looking at these young drivers, like our, for instance, Calvin van der Linde and Jordan Peppers, that have all gone international and shown, you know, some huge, huge prowess and ability. And if we can just some, I heard you talking about it earlier on with the athletics guy, and saying, you know, if these guys could actually find some funding, we could have somebody in Formula One tomorrow, but.
Yeah. And just tell me the booing of Vettel at some of the races this season. I mean, what has that got to do with?
You know what it is? It's a bit of hype from the crowd. It's a bit of hype from the other teams. They do the same kind of thing as what you used to see with Rossi and with Biaggi and what we've seen with Marquez and Giorgi Lorenzo. Those kind of things always happen. And it's a bit of a brand association as well. You know, a lot of guys can relate to Ferrari or Mercedes-Benz, or, and if you're a Red Bull fan, you're a Red Bull fan. But I think when you get into the brand association of the actual driver, Sebastian's not the most popular driver in the world. And it's because I think, you know, he's kind of been the class of Red Bull Racing, and maybe, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, Weber wasn't given the same kind of machinery on occasions. It has happened, and it has happened in previous teams as well. McLaren, we knew. He was talking about Senna now and how Senna used to get all the top quality stuff. You had Senna and Prost that used to fight it out all the time, and at some stage, Prost was questioning, saying, listen, hold on a second, am I getting the same kind of machinery? And I think the crowd, you can't, you know, as much as you want to put the smoke and mirrors in front of a massive crowd that they get at F1, sometimes those smoke and mirrors can be seen clearly and as clear as daylight, and they can see where things have gone maybe a little bit towards the, you know, the choreography side of F1.
Yeah. And what did you make of Lewis? What did you make of Lewis Hamilton's first season with Mercedes?
Absolute nightmare. I have to say that, because unfortunately the kid is also, he's a very talented driver, and he's been brought up through the right ranks in terms of the way he's supposed to have progressed in his sport. He's done everything right. He's won a world championship, so you know that he's got the ability. But unfortunately, I don't think Mercedes-Benz was the right match for him, eh? I think he's got another season there, so he can't get out of it. But we'll wait and see whether he sticks with Merck and heading into the 2015 season. And, of course, there's big changes heading up into that one, too, with possibilities of engine derivatives and maybe some turbos coming in. I mean, the way that things are going in F1, you can just never shut up and never keep quiet, because things just keep coming and they get thrown at you all the time.
South African motorsport, what's been happening? I know we chatted to Mark Cronier last week. Him and Robin Houghton have won the South African Rally Championship again. What else can you tell us?
Oh, that was a super interview with him, and he's a really nice guy, both Rob and Mark. His brother's going to be in action this weekend. As you know, the Super Series wraps up this weekend. Unfortunately, we're trying something a little different, and I say unfortunately also with a bit of tongue-in-cheek, because it's always nice to try something different at the end of the season. The cars are going to Kyle Army. The bikes are going to Red Star. We've got an all-bike day at Red Star, and we've got an all-car day at Kyle Army. So it'll be something different for the final. Unfortunately, if you're a fan of both, you're kind of going to have to go with where your gut and where your favorites are. But as I said, his brother, Gavin, is going to be in action, fighting out for Production Car Championship in Class T with Graham Nathan. Nathan leads into the round and heads things up in the Indy Oil Golf. So whether he can catch or be caught by the mini of Gavin Cronier, we'll have to wait and see. That's the big battle that's on the cards there. In the Class A's, of course, Michael Stephen literally has one hand on the trophy. So he's literally got to just finish up within the top five in each race. And he's got it sorted out for a triple championship for him as well, which will be pretty awesome for the Engine Extreme Audi team. When we go to the V8s and sports cars, those both titles are wrapped up, but second and third place are still up for grabs. And, of course, the overall title in the sports and GTs is still up for grabs between Ben Morgenroot and Roy Campos. In the single-seaters, both titles literally done and dusted. Formula Volkswagen went the way of Robert Volk. In the 1600s, though, it's still between the two Campos boys. And when I say we spoke about Roy Campos as a sports and GT champion, we're looking at Jason and Keegan, his two sons, that are fighting it out for honors in Midas Formula 1600. So that's still up for grabs. In the polos, Chris Evaez wrapped it up down in his hometown in Cape Town at the last round of Super Series. But, of course, in polos, you can never throw anything out. And with a class of about 50 cars, I think they're going to be lining up there, all of them ex-carters and very talented youngsters. They're going to be fighting for cup honors for second, third, and fourth place in that championship. But the Masters title is still up for grabs there. And Etienne Detoy and Eddie Rodriguez will fight it out for that particular aspect. So that's the four-wheel side. When we go across the Red Star, a brand-new venue. They've never had a national before, Graham. So it's something completely unique for the end of the season. And on top of it, the Northern Regions Championship has joined us and has decided, you know what, let's make it an all-bike day. Let's make it a big bumper day. And we're going to go and race there on Saturday. There's a track day on Sunday. And we're going to see if we can wrap things up in the 600 title, because the 1000s has already gone the way of Kinsella on the Craig Zank Associates Kawasaki.
Greg, You're an absolute champion, a wealth of information. We're going to have to leave it there, my boy. Greg Maloney, we'll catch up again soon, boy.
Looking forward to it, Josh. Thanks, all the best.
Thanks again, then, Greg Maloney. Celebrity birthdays, 28th of October. Wim Jansen, the Dutch footballer and coach. Mark Livermore, the French rugby union player and coach. English footballer Alan Smith. The Czech footballer Milan Baroš. And the Nigerian footballer Obafemi Martins.
Soccer 6 is your chance to score big. Over 4 million rand is won on Soccer 6 every week, and it's easy to play. To win, you must forecast the results of 6 matches. Play by phone, online, or on your mobile. Soccer 6, your best soccer bet.
Right, just before we get to Shane McGregor, just looking back at what happened on the weekend with regards horse racing, and we're going to be chatting also some football, English football, of course. Shane McGregor, big Liverpool fan, and also I chatted to Mike de Kock at the weekend, and I'm just amazed what this guy has achieved this year with winners overseas. I don't know how many winners here back home, and still not a nomination for the South African Sports Awards. I just don't get it. Shane Mack, hello boy.
How's it, Joffers?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. I'm off my soapbox. Right, let's run through everything with you quickly, my boy. Soweto Derby, your thoughts?
Well, there were two very good incidents in the game when the ref blew the final whistle and the fight that happened in between it, you know.
Those are hard.
Boring. I thought it was boring, Joffa. Sorry, you know, it's not that good, but I actually did. I thought the game was boring. For the first 10 minutes, I thought it was going to be a good game, and then it just peaked out. And both teams were scared to lose. And, you know, just, The Derby's lost a lot of its spark.
Arsenal in the English Premiership hanging tough at the top.
Yeah, it was tough for them on the weekend, you know, and fought it out and came back with a 2-0 one. But having a player sent off, Arteta, I thought he was a bit unlucky. Clash of legs, and I thought it was a bit harsh on the referee's part. But anyway, that's what happens. But, you know, they got the 3 points, and good luck to them. Still top there, and we're all saying when they're gonna crack. But December's coming.
Chelsea gifted that win at Man City. I mean, against Man City. I mean, really. I mean, Torres is not going to have a much easier goal.
Well, I've seen him miss a few of those in my time over the last few years. But anyway, you know, yeah, you know, gifted. And, you know, if any player deserves it, it's him. He's taken abuse. He's been under pressure. And he's been playing well in the last 2 weeks for them. So, you know, good luck. Once again, I think they had settled for the draw and they would have been happy with the draw. But a good win. I said to the beginning of the year, you know, they're the team to watch out for in this league, and I'm still going to say it. I think those two will actually fight the title out, Man City and Chelsea.
Man United, boy, did they need that win over Stoke, and at times it looked like they weren't going to get it.
Exactly, they had to come back twice, 2-1 down, 1-0 down, 2-1 down. But, you know, they got the result. They once again, their man Van Persie and Rooney. What can we say about Rooney? Sublime form. But, you know, to be conceding goals to a Stoke team that are really struggling just says it all about United. Long way still to go, though, Joffers, long way. And, yeah, they'll be in there about the end of the season, but they've still got a long, long way to go.
Liverpool's 4-1 win over West Brom?
Yeah, they keep on doing it. I mean, what can you say about Suarez? Brilliant player. I mean, their first goal from the head was brilliant. And, you know, even Sturridge, a great chip goal. And between the two of them, they're scoring left, right and centre, and they just keep going, and they continue for me, and I'm loving it. But I do expect the wheels to come off sooner or later there.
All right, the soccer pools, did they pay?
Well, Saturday's one, the pool got you 35.8 million, Joffers. That's for the soccer 13. 32 winners of it paid 634,000, and they're expecting a bumper pool again this weekend, another 32 million rand pool. It's unbelievable, you know. And even on Wednesday, they're expecting another 7 million rand pool. Huge money. Yeah.
Beautiful. Right, South African horse racing at the weekend. I didn't see anything, so you're going to have to guide me.
Well, there were two very good runs from two very top horses in Cape Town on the weekend. A horse called Red Ray, a youngster, is a three-year-old. I think he's had 4 runs, 1-3 and ran second in the other from the Joey Ranson stable. A very, very good one, won easily. But there was a horse that ran second to that as well that you must look out for over distance, a horse called Legislate. Came flying, came from basically the back of the field. Justin Snow's horse ran second. But I'll tell you what, I can't see much beating Red Ray over, as a three-year-old over 1,600 meters. And then Beach Beauty, seasonal debut in Cape Town, won easily, a very good run. So nice horses to look forward to in the coming season.
Right, finally, banker for the week.
Banker for the week. I'm going to go horse racing this week. A horse that's only run once is a horse called Sir Duke from Dean Canemeyer. It's running in the fifth race at Kenilworth on Wednesday. I think this horse is also going to go places. Keep your eye on it and keep backing it until it gets beaten. Sir Duke.
Love your work. Shane Mack, we'll touch base again next Monday.
Thanks, Shoppers.
Cheers, my boy. Best on the TV for the early part of this week. Tuesday, Capital One Cup. You got Arsenal at home to Chelsea. Man United entertain Norwich. You got the Paribas ATP Tennis Netball. South Africa against Zambia. Wednesday, you got the first ODI. Pakistan against South Africa. Momentum One Day Cup. The Cobras against the Lions. Australia against India. The sixth ODI. You got Capital One Cup. Newcastle against Man City. Tottenham against Hull. And, of course, that netball final. And then Thursday, the HSBC World Golf Championship. Right, finally tonight, as usual, we catch up with our off-the-wall analyst, Norm, stand-up comedian Malcolm Ferreira. Never quite sure what you're going to get, but old Norm, he's been in good form of late, living in the caravan park. Still don't know exactly where he lives, but one of these days I think we need to get Norm back in studio to get all the nitty-gritty stuff about Norm. But anyway, here he is. Hello, Norm.
How's it going?
What's news?
You know, the normal stuff here in the park over the weekend. You know, just the stuff. One of my friends, he took his wife to the church.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because there was something wrong with her, so he had her exercised. But then he couldn't afford to pay it, so she got repossessed. And then old Ben stole for he. He actually donated blood. So he's never felt better in his life. It turned out it wasn't his child after all. So, you know, and I'm just sitting with old Darby Two Kegs.
Who?
Darby Two Kegs.
Darby Two Eggs.
Two Kegs.
Darby Two Kegs.
Yeah, it's a double barrel surname. You know, he tells me funny jokes. Hey, Graham, what's red and small and it whispers?
What's red and it's small and it whispers? What?
A horse radish. You don't get it, do you?
No, I get it, but it's... It sounds like some of my stuff.
I'm not saying radishes can actually talk. It's not like we've been saping, yeah?
It sounds like some of my material, Norm.
No, Graham. I couldn't fit into your material. It would be too loose on me. But listen, speaking of oaks who drink too much, hey, the Springbok squad they've announced.
Yep.
Graham, Zane Kurtzman, Ron Pienaar. No, seriously. You know, even in an interview last week, James Small alluded to the KK problem. You know the KK problem?
Let's hear it.
No, the Kirchner cockness problem. And you know, James Small smokes flamebos, eh? So if you're an oak who's on boom and you're that slow and you can see there's a problem, how can a handicap not see this? And you know, bringing Jacques and Bucky's back.
I see that.
First, you know, you can't get into the team because you go overseas. And you can't get into the team if you're not overseas. And so the handicap man's got those two personalities. One is Hendrik Verhoed and the other is Nelson Mandela. So he's his own worst enemy. Hey, Graham, do you not agree?
No, Norma, I do tend to agree with you.
You know, in the headlines, apparently Western Province are on a hunt for a number 9, a lock and a wing. Maybe stop with the safaris and start finding decent players. And then Graham Smith also, he said that we must give them more credit. Don't these oaks earn enough to pay cash? Hey, that Ari Smith is holding off on him. And listen to the Serena Williams thing, hey. I've got a suggestion, Graham.
What's that?
I think we give her all the medals and the trophies in the beginning of the year. and then save all the embarrassment and ask the torture of all your winning the Olympics.
Love even your work,
Jim
Norm.
Even Jim Carrey accused Dave of overacting, hey? And can you hear me quickly saying there was a lot of crying at Newlands on Saturday?
There was a what?
A lot of crying.
Crying on Saturday.
Crying, yeah. You know, I don't think the rugby players or the refs like the national anthem.
Oh, Norm, love your work.
God, have you grand. You want more? I've got loads of facts for you still if you got time, eh?
No, we'll have to chat Thursday. Sorry, my boy.
Yo, you never come visit. You always say that, but you got all the time in the world for Dan.
Bye-bye, King.
I'm going to unfriend him. Okay, I'll leave you back.
Unfriend him. That's it for Sports Fire from all the team. Good night.
All the sports, all the news, Sports Fire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Ricoh.